check out Rush Collectibles' awesome horror figures, including the first and only Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 figures. For more information, go to rushfigures.com.
Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, I'm not doing too bad. I'm still on the upswing from my sickness that I had last week, so I feel significantly better, but still there just a little bit.
You're still down with the sickness?
I'm down with the sickness, as the band Disturbed would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're doing better than a few people on the movie we watched this week, because this week we are reviewing the movie Late Night with the Devil, which is available on Shudder right now. Before we get there, we have to take care of all the usual suspects. First of all, thank you to all the listeners, followers, and our wives for all of your support and encouragement in everything you do. We do appreciate that. So before we dive any deeper, Ike, what did you watch this week?
Oh, man. Let's see. I didn't watch a whole lot. I did have a chance to catch Abigail, which I won't talk a lot about since it just came out, and because we may or may not be reviewing that next week.
Mm-hmm.
But I caught that in theaters, which honestly, well, first and foremost, I caught that in theaters, and there was a trailer before the movie, and I'm sure Dave will probably catch this. It's for a movie called Speak No Evil, which is actually a remake of a movie that came out just like a year ago. But the one that came out a year ago was like a Danish film. They actually speak like full English. It was actually 2022, my bad. They speak full English in it, and it's on Shudder. But yeah, they're remaking it, and has James McAvoy in it. But it looks really good, so check that out if you guys want to check out that trailer. But I saw that before the movie, and I was like, I've not seen any trailers for this, so it was just kind of surprising. But other than Abigail, I really haven't watched a whole lot. Let's see. I finished off and watched, what was it? I watched the remake of Night of the Living Dead, just because I was still on my Living Dead kick. So I watched the remake of that, and I also watched the other Day of the Dead movie, which was like Day of the Dead, Bloodlines, I think it is, which was like made a couple years ago, and it was not very good.
Is that it?
Yep, I think that's it.
Well, pretty much the only thing horror-related that I watched was the movie from 2003 called Malevolence, which is out there on Peacock. I don't know. I saw this mentioned somewhere on social media, and I can't remember where. It's a Ty West movie, and it's kind of made in a slasher, 80s slasher tribute type, and it was pretty good. It was a fun little watch. I was confused, excuse me, when I first was looking for it, because I kept searching Malevolent. Knowing I knew the movie was called Malevolence, but I just always kept tapping Malevolent. I thought, no, it's not this movie. This is not the movie they're talking about. And so I was very confused myself. But and I believe, if I saw correctly, there is a Malevolence 2 out there. So I'm going to have to give that a watch and see what it's about. But it's, not a bad little movie. Again, it's from 2003. It is available on Peacock. So people should give it a watch. So with that, let's get on to our weekly segment.
Stomp the co-host.
And this episode, we are doing Stump the Co-host, or as I like to call it, Dave's Embarrassment segment, because I've not been performing real well. And Ike obviously was the 2023 champion for Stump the Co-host. I'm trying to pull up and see where we stand so far this year. So far this year, Ike is up 2-1. I have one. So I'm still in the game. Could use a strong win today to tie the sucker up. So let's see what happens. Ike. Oh, I guess I should explain this to our listeners. For those who may not know, Stump the Co-Host is our horror trivia game. Ike and I have identical decks of horror trivia cards. We pull two cards apiece, which is four questions. Each card has two questions on it. And we alternate asking each other horror trivia questions. And at the end of this game, we determine who won, lost, or if we drew. And we document that down for keep a running total for the year. Like I said, last year, Ike won the 2023 crown. Wiped the ground pretty good with me. So we're going to see what happens here. Again, Ike is currently up 2-1 on me. So feel free to play at home. Ike, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. I'm going to give you the first question today. It is, what actress played the heroine Helen Lyle in the 1992 film Candyman?
Oh, so I always get the character confused from Candyman with Heather Langenkamp, which is not Heather Langenkamp. I don't know why I get those two confused, but it is Virginia Madsen. Is that right?
Yes, it is Virginia Madsen. Correct.
I know that they look nothing alike, but for some reason, just in my brain, for some reason, Heather Langenkamp and her always get mixed for some reason.
All right. So that is correct. You're up 1-0. So here I am playing catch up once again.
Let's see. I think you got this one. I think you got this one. Okay.
Man, you should not ever say that, because every time you do it.
I feel like we've talked about this movie, so I feel like you do know this, but I guess we'll find out.
I guess.
All right. What 2016 movie finds a group of thieves trapped inside a house they're trying to rob and discover the owner is not just a blind, helpless victim?
Oh. What is this movie? I just watched this movie not too long ago. Oh, my. Damn, this was a pretty good movie. Fudge. Well, I don't know. I cannot for the life of me cannot remember the name of it at all whatsoever.
Oh, man.
I am.
No, I was going to say, I feel like we just talked about this. It's Don't Breathe.
Yeah, that's it. See, I knew it was something like it. I kept thinking, is it like Hush, Whisper? You know, I knew it had something of that flavor going, and I could not. Again, I just watched this not too awful long ago, I think, within the last year. Damn it. All right, well, here we go. Back, I guess some things just never change. All right, here is your second question. What 1971 film features a group of killer rats that are led by a man seeking revenge on those who have wronged him?
I have not a clue. The Pied Piper?
Oh, no, that is Willard.
I've never heard of that.
Actually, it was remade years later with Crispin Glover.
We actually just talked about Crispin Glover last week, I think.
Mm-hmm, we did. All right. Well, okay. So I got a shot here. Let's see what happens.
All right. When a Japanese high school student attempts to escape the Battle Royale, what method of control does Takeshi Kitano demonstrate?
Oh, geez, Louise. What type of control? None of this. None of this clicks anything with, I don't know. So what type of control? How about, I don't know. We'll just, I mental control? I don't know. I don't know what that means. Go ahead.
Honestly, the question's worded weirdly. So the answer is detonates the explosive collar. So in the movie Battle Royale, basically they take like, it's like the Hunger Games, like if the Hunger Games happened in Japan and it was also like really bloody and gory, like more so than the Hunger Games. But they basically take a bunch of like high school students and like put explosive collars on them and let them loose on an island full of like weapons and traps and stuff. It's pretty good. It's from like 2000, I think.
Well, If you say so. All right. Well, I blew that opportunity, so let's see what happens now. Here is your third question. In the 2009 film Paranormal Activity, what object do the spirits use to communicate with the living?
Why, that would be a Ouija board.
Sure would. Okay. So I have got to get this right to even have a chance to pull a draw out of this thing. So yes, bring it on.
All right. I'm bringing it. Excuse me. What is the name of Broken Lizard's 2000? What is the name of Broken Lizard's 2004 slasher film that was released after Super Troopers?
So the people who made Super Troopers also made a slasher film, huh?
Yes.
Intriguing.
I do know this movie. I've never seen it, but I do know of it.
Yeah, I no idea. What is it?
It's Club Dread.
Well, there goes another loss for me. Here's your final question. At the end of the 2001 film The Others, what did the mother, Grace, figure out about herself and her children?
That they were all dead.
Yes. Seriously? I knew that one. Okay, go ahead. Give me just ceremoniously. Give me my last question, and let's see if I can't, avoid a shutout.
All right. What, or should I say, which J.J. Abrams film had a tentative title 1808?
1808? Yep. I don't know. Cloverfield? I don't know.
Yeah, it's Cloverfield. Good job.
I'm like, I didn't know what else to guess here. I'm like, I maybe Cloverfield? Okay, well, there you go. I guess I mustered 1 point. For a 3-1 loss. So Ike is now up 3-1 for the year. So, oh boy. Last year I mounted a late year rally. I was hoping this year to do that a little earlier, but so far it's not looking promising. But you never know. You never know. Sometimes it's the luck of the draw on the cards. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will have news, birthdays, anniversaries, etc., so stick around. Make sure you subscribe to listen to Their Screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams, that is Listen, the number 2 in Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. And welcome back to the news. All right, starting us off with a little bit of controversy. The original Blair Witch Project actors Heather Donahue, Joshua Leonard, and Mike Williams, and the original filmmakers have issued statements asking the actors be properly compensated for their role in the iconic film. They're asking retroactive and future residuals based on the SAG-AFTRA, I'm assuming the SAG-AFTRA strike.
SAG-AFTRA.
And then had they had representation at the time, as well as meaningful consultation on any future Blair Witch Project. Actually, I did read about this, and I'm obviously in full support of it. I mean, the movie's made at the end of the 90s. I mean, not only was the film scene at that time very, you know, limited and very rough, but you also have the issue of that, like, these were, like, independent filmmakers, and these were, I mean, they were kids at the time. And it's kind of one of, not, like, actual kids, but they were very young, obviously. And so, you know, There's a lot of exploitation that happens on Hollywood, especially on movies that, like, don't have a huge, huge budget with, like, big motion picture names and things like that. So, yeah, I definitely feel like they were probably shafted big time back in the day. So I feel like it's not unreasonable to try and get a little bit of something out of it, especially considering that the Blair Witch movie has spawned, I mean, probably millions of dollars in revenue between merchandising, more video games, movies, future projects. I mean, come on. There's so much stuff that's come from that.
Yeah. And and this was a weird situation because of their approach at the time, right? They didn't play characters in the movie, right? They just went by their real names to try to give it that feel so that people would think that this was a real thing, right? A real found footage deal. And, you know, because it was an indie film that started doing well, it was snatched up, you know, pretty quickly by, you know, a big company. I don't know who it was, Lionsgate or something like that. Anyway, but yeah, and even those original filmmakers on the indie level, these are guys that this is pre when it was bought out and became a part of something bigger and really was merchandised and marketed and everything else. They also on their part say, hey, these guys, you know, they should really be getting more, right? They're supporting this. Because, you know, there was a lot of factors in play at the time because of the marketing. It was a very small film. Who knew it was going to catch on like this, right? They didn't go through the typical union actor thing because they were trying to make it pass it off as being a real thing, right? That was part of their marketing. And so, you know, these actors have kind of got caught up in that and manipulated it a bit by the big company who bought out the rights to the film and stuff because, you know, I mean, legally they didn't have to pay anything because of the avenue it's went. But, the right thing to do is that should have been actually rectified at the time when the bought out, you know, there should have been probably some side agreements and side contracts with the actors to do the right thing. We'll see what happens. And it's very relevant now because there's, you know, the talks of a new Blair Witch coming out and everything else. It's kind of a relevant topic. So we'll see what happens here.
Yeah, absolutely. But all right. A filming is officially underway for Leigh Whannell's Wolfman, which is due in theaters on January 17th, 2025. For those of us who have been watching for or listening for a little while, you guys know that this actually originally got delayed. I think it originally had like an October of this year release date, but they delayed it to next year, which I think was a justified move just to make sure that they do it right, you know?
Yeah. Again, this was one that I think we talked about at the time when they first talked about this and first announced it, and they announced it around Halloween of this year. We were all kind of like, ooh, that's how are they going to pull that off? And again, it was overly ambitious on their part, and they adjusted the date to a more reasonable time that they can work with and stuff. But yeah, it is a officially filming, ball rolling. So rock on.
That's right. Rock and roll. All right. And then one other little bit of a last minute news. There is a crowd-funded horror film called Stream from the Terrifier team coming to theaters and streaming up. I'm hoping Stream is going to be streaming. It's going to be in August of 2024. So I'll watch anything that team does. Anything they do is gold. And obviously, I'm all for another slasher movie for sure.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. It is getting a theatrical release with one of the events, so it won't be a huge release. But I would expect a streaming. I don't know if their partnership again with Screambox, like the Terrifier stuff does, if they've got something in place there. I believe David Howard Thornton is in this movie as well. I don't know how big his role is, it's going to be a fun movie. I'm excited. It's another project by the Terrifier team, essentially. And it's one of those things we've known for a while. Is it there, going to happen? You know, they know they've worked on or whatever else, but we were waiting on it. And it's kind of cool that when they finally announced, it's like, oh, yeah, that's only like in 4 months. That's cool. That's great. I'm excited. Can't wait to watch it.
Absolutely. All right. Now it's time for the fun stuff. The birthdays, anniversaries. So our first birthday is Andrew Gower, who is Sean in Monster Squad, April 27th, 1973. Monster Squad is on my list of movies to watch from Dave, of course. I have not watched this movie yet, but I obviously will probably know who this person is once I do.
Yeah, he's the main kid in it. And yeah, you need to. Great movie. Great movie. And he's also such a huge supporter of the movie, right? And all the anniversary showings. And I actually believe he was the driving force. There was a documentary on it and things like that, that he did it and things like that. So yeah, but he's the main character in Monster Squad.
Gotcha. Check that out sometime, and I'll eventually watch that and talk about it on a future episode, I'm sure. But all right. April 29th, 1981, Alex Vincent, known as Andy Barkley from Child's Play. Of course, Alex Vincent has recently reprised his role as Andy in the Chucky series. So he's done it for a long time, and he's continued to do it successfully. And he's, even though he's no longer a child actor, I feel like he definitely has done the role justice in the series. And so, yeah, I mean, I haven't really seen him in much else other than Chucky, so I guess that's all I can really speak on.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I assume he's done a couple other things. I don't know. Obviously he's, even as an adult, you could see it in him. You can still see Andy, so.
Yeah, it looks like he's done a handful of other things, but it looks like for the most part, it's mostly been like either in, like small independent films or Chucky.
Yeah. So. But, hey, again, it's most people have a whole career of acting and don't get one of those iconic roles that they're known for forever.
It's very true. That is very true. Alex Vincent has Andy, though, so that's what we can say for him. Mm-hmm. All right. And then we have a couple of anniversaries. April 26, 2002, we have Jason X. This is Dave's favorite Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah.
Just as Cabin Fever is his favorite movie as well. Mm-hmm. Not kid. Jason X is a product of its time, and that's about all the good stuff that I can say about it. if you watch this movie and you pretend it's not a Friday the 13th movie, it's almost enjoyable. If not for just the cheesiness of like the film, but this movie suffers hard from the 2000s like bullshit that they just did in the 2000s, and sending Jason Voorhees to space was probably not at the top of the idea list, so I'm not really sure how they came to this conclusion, but it's whatever, they did it.
Yeah, and it's almost become a punchline of this, right? Oh, sending so-and-so to space. And it's because of that. But yeah, the thing is, I love cheesy sci-fi type movies. And had this not been a Friday the 13th, just some other cheesy slasher, I probably would have enjoyed it more. And I know that sounds weird to say, okay, well then why did, because it just doesn't make sense to me that it's, Jason Voorhees. It mucks it up for me, right? It's like a clashing of two things I like that just didn't work. And I'm not a fan.
Yeah, me neither, but I'm sure there are fans out there of Jason X.
There are plenty of them.
If you guys are listening, what is your argument for Jason X? I guess I've always been curious, so maybe we can make that a Twitter thing or an X thing, whatever the fuck they call it. Like what is
X thing?
X Twitter. I don't know.
Like Jason X.
I see what you did there, but I'm legitimately curious. Like
Elon Musk is a fan. Maybe that's why he renamed it.
Right, maybe. But like for real though, I'm legitimately curious, like the opposing side of this argument, because I don't think I've ever heard anybody defend Jason X. So I guess if anybody out there is like really passionate about Jason X and like thinks it's a cinema masterpiece, like let me know. Tell me why it's a masterpiece. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. Moving on. April 30th, 2010, Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake. We've talked about the remake. I talked to Monica on the show about the remake, unfortunately. And, I like the remake. I think the remake is a very solid and, a positive interpretation of the role. I know a lot of people didn't like that they recast the character who plays the guy who plays Freddy, instead of it being Robert Englund, I think they went with Jackie Earle Haley. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a good interpretation of, Freddy Krueger and the Friday 13th franchise. But yeah, it's I know a lot of people don't like it, but yeah, and it's hard. I not that I don't see the other part of that, but I don't know. I feel like it's good enough to be worthy of a watch, I guess you could say.
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
We'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, the next one, May 1st, 1981, Friday the 13th, Part 2. Part 2, it's all right to me. It doesn't stick out super strong in my mind. I think we've talked about this before, but I think this is it this one or is it 3 that's like your definitive Jason?
It is 3. Part 2 is Baghead Jason.
That's right. And,
So,
okay, I always get 2 and 3 mixed up. So I don't mind 2. I'm not a huge fan of 3 just because it's not super memorable to me. But I do know that's when they introduced the hockey mask. But the Baghead Jason is not horrible. I like the scene with the pitchfork. Yeah. It's done pretty well.
Yeah. I like I like it. I really, I really do like it. And I like – it's wild to me how Jason can have two looks. And we'll just lump all the hockey mask stuff together. Right? I know there's a lot of variation, and I know that. But we're just talking about, the standard, right, the hockey mask look. And then the Baghead look. And both of them are very, very cool and iconic. And, and they both – story-wise, it makes sense, right? There was a progression to how he got – to the hockey mask and whatnot. And, it's very cool. I mean, I like the Baghead look too. I think it's pretty cool and it works in there. I don't think it has the long-term marketability of, what happened with the hockey mask thing, but it worked in the concept and in the overall story. I like to, I'm a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. But, that's some pretty strong movie anniversary. It's interesting that we had 2 Friday the 13th films on there, so that's pretty cool. But, all right, upcoming release time, and we got some good ones for here, too. Steamboat, the horror movie based on 1928's Mickey Mouse Steamboat Willie cartoon, has announced they're getting a theatrical release in 2025. Now, obviously, Dave and I are huge on the public domain horror film train. Like we are the conductors, we're putting coal in the engine, we are setting this shit ablaze. Like we are all about this stuff, and I'm very excited for this. I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll be cheesy, it'll be fun. But I've already seen a lot of people online like already getting up in arms about it. I'm just like, bro, not even out yet.
Yeah, whatever. I don't care. Bring it on. I want to see it. I hope it's fun and cheesy and goofy and everything else. And I'm just going to go. I'm going to buy some popcorn and just have a blast watching this thing.
Absolutely. I mean, how do you not just enjoy Steamboat Willie just massacring people? I mean, like, come on. But
the concept of Mickey Mouse as a villain, just it's great.
It's all about the subversion of expectations. That's what a lot of people don't understand. It's like, we know that this is not how it is, but like, it's gonna be cool anyways. But all right. And then last, we have Founders Day. Will be released video on demand May 7th, 2024. Did we review Founders Day? Yeah, we reviewed Founders Day at the beginning of this year when it came out.
I don't think so, because I don't remember ever watching it.
I don't remember. Now that you say that, I'm like, did we review it?
I don't think we did. You may have watched it. I don't know. I haven't seen it, I don't believe, yet. So, I don't think we reviewed it.
I gotcha. Well, I have seen it, and I remember I didn't really care for it too much.
I guess we did watch it, or we did review it. my bad. Okay. I don't remember. I don't know. Whatever. This is the one with the mayoral election thing, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess. Gosh. Must have not made much of an impact on me.
Probably not. I mean, Here's the deal. It wasn't my favorite movie. It felt like it was trying to do what Thanksgiving did, but like slightly worse. So yeah, I mean, take it for what it's worth. It wasn't the worst movie, but if you want to watch it on video on demand, you can do that soon.
Yeah. And you can apparently listen to our review back in the archives, which must have been riveting because I didn't even remember doing it.
There's a lot of movies where I'm like, man, I know, I'm pretty sure we reviewed this, but I'm like, I just can't remember. I mean, we're what, 85? This is 86 episodes in.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, though, even stuff we don't actual review, we end up, you know, we usually chat about some and talk about. So it does get confusing sometimes of, did we actually do a review on that? Or did we just talk about it in the news? Or did we talk about it in the opening? Or because, you know, I mean, all these movies we're talking about all the time through the news usually, you know, and oh, it started filming. So yes. And you know, I am old. And I, you know, I do drink scotch and everything else. So I have lots of excuses to why I can't remember these things. But no, it's just it's sometimes it's, you know, it's tricky to differentiate what we truly did a review on as opposed to just, you know, because I feel like we're pretty thorough in our news coverage of things as movies progress. And so sometimes it's like I feel like we've talked all about it and reviewed it, even though we didn't actually do a review.
It's usually how it is.
And typically, even the movies we don't review, we end up watching. You know, we watch them, whether it's in theater or when it comes. So we do watch them. So it's a, you know, it's weird. Whatever.
It is weird when you start doing the podcast and you're like, yeah, I'm just going to watch this. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I reviewed this. And you're like, did I watch it? Did I review it? You start going a little crazy. I happened the other day with Stop Motion. I saw it. We have it on Vudu. And I was like, have we watched this? Did I watch this? Uh-huh. I'm like, yeah, I did watch this. I liked it, yeah. I think.
We reviewed it, yeah.
But, anyhow.
Yeah. So apparently, I need to watch Founders Day video on demand on May 7th to refresh my memory of the time that I already watched it and reviewed it. Because
we apparently have a group dementia because we keep forgetting things.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, like you said, though, it's, when I try to think of it, all I can picture is Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
that
was my issue too, because I was like, I'm pretty sure I watched this, and I'm pretty sure we reviewed it, but I was like, but I can't remember. Oh Lord!
But I do remember it having something to do with the mayoral election and whatnot, and whatever. My apologies to those involved in Founders Day.
Right? Yeah. If anybody's listening, we're sorry, guys. We promise we watched it. We promise it was reviewed. I promise. But anywho. What we're going to do now is we're going to try and remember where we are, what we're doing, who we are, and when we are. And we're going to go ahead and tell you guys, well, go ahead and follow us on social media. I didn't forget to pitch the social media, that's for sure. Follow us on social media. You won't regret it. Always a good time. We talk about all this stuff. And like I said, I want to hear some conversation about Jason X on social media, so let me know. Yeah. But when we come back, we are going to finally give a review of Late Night with the Devil. Stick around.
Listen to Their Screams is now a Fangoria collaborator. Get 20% off your order at shop.fangoria.com by using the promo code LISTEN2SCREAMS at checkout. That is listen, the number two, and screams. Or you can click the link in the show notes. All right, and we're back. I feel like we need some of that that big band late night talk show music. All right. And here we are back on Listen to the Screams. And I feel like that's how we had to, should pitch the break. And now let's take a word from our sponsors. But we are going to review Late Night with the Devil. It's written and directed by Colin and Cameron Cairns, starring David how do you say his name? Dasmalchian?
Yeah, Dasmalchian or something like that.
Dasmalchian. Laura Gordon and Ingrid Torelli. It was released March 22nd in limited theaters and then April 19th on Shudder. While it was in theaters the opening weekend, it grossed $2,834,867, which was good for number six that weekend. This is a movie that when I first saw glimpses of it and first saw, you know, the trailer and whatnot about it, I was super stoked and excited about this movie. I know we previewed movies we were looking forward to in 2024. Here in a minute, I will see if I can reference that list and see if this was on there. I don't know where we caught wind of it, if it was in time to make that. But I do know I've been super excited to see this movie. Could not wait. Wanted to go in theaters. It didn't happen, right? We talked about it. It was also released during that time with Ghostbusters and something else. What was it?
Was it Immaculate? Yeah.
Immaculate. Yeah. And it was, so a busy time there that week and things were hitting. So we decided to wait and give it the review on the Shudder release. And man almighty, it was well worth the wait. This movie, again, when I kept seeing the previews and stuff, I thought, man, it just looks clever, right? It looks kind of unique in its take. And I know someone on one of the social medias pointed out another movie that had a similar approach back. And I get it, right? I get that. Yeah, there's probably been other movies maybe that have done this, but in recent times, there's not a lot that come to mind. And at least it's not an oversaturated approach, as a lot of things are. But I thought, man, this movie was great. I thought it was so well acted. The girl, I believe it was was Ingrid Torelli that played, I can't remember her name in the movie, but anyway, the girl that was the conduit to be possessed, the demon, the devil, whatever to come, or what was it they call it?
It has a name.
Abraxas.
Abraxas, yes. Yeah.
And I could remember that because they used the demon Abraxas in Supernatural. It was the one that killed Nick's family to make him vulnerable to accept Lucifer as a host in Supernatural. So I can remember Abraxas from that. But anyway, her, the girl, she did, but she was extraordinary. She was creepy from point A when she walked out, and just her mannerisms, the way she was smiling and looking and asking these questions. But she was creepy right from the jump. But everybody did such a good job, right? You felt for the host guy, right? Losing his wife and being in this situation. And you knew with the backs, again, spoilers through all this. Some of the backstory they gave of the group of, rich intellectual type men, having these meetings that were kind of getting, being critiqued because of their ceremonies and different things. You knew that would kind of, be a thing. The guy that played the co-host or whatever you want to call it, the sidekick guy, was great. Because, he played up that cheesy 70s, 80s sidekick guy to a T. The guy that was I don't even know what he was exactly. I don't recall, but the guy that was also a guest on the show who was trying to disprove everything.
He was basically there. He's actually modeled after a real person who carried around a check. And basically he was I'm pretty sure he was a stage performer, but like he was a staunch, like non-believer of anything. So like he was just trying to like basically prove the unprovable, essentially.
Yeah. And he was he was really good, too, because he was, because through the course of this movie, you're building right towards the demon and the devil thing and all that, blah, blah, blah. But so he kind of filled that role of a kind of a villainous kind of character that you really just didn't like through the whole thing, because he was, pretty arrogant and, rude. I mean, we're just interrupting people, right? Even despite having a differing opinion, a different point, it was just, he was being really snarky about it, right? And his approach and just cutting people off and making jokes and just not, not exactly approaching it. Skepticism's fine. But, the way he was, so anyway, he filled that role of a kind of a villainous person, character that you could hate through it, which, is necessary, right? And especially that's one thing I think a lot of movies don't do when you're building to this big reveal of something at the end, the main evil. Sometimes that build is kind of boring because you don't really have something that's agitating you and you don't have that antagonist going through. And, I think they did it well having him on there as kind of an antagonist role going through it. And, period piece type, it looked well. The set, it was just, I think it was all done well. The music was great. Even just the little things when things would happen and the audience would gasp. And so that just added to it. And, I enjoyed this movie so much. And, when it, it was done and I was like, oh, that was it. It was because it's just like it flew by for me. I was really, kind of caught off when it was over because I thought, not that the movie, I didn't feel like the story was complete enough. It just, it did not feel like it was already, you know, whatever, an hour and a half for me. And man, I just, all the anticipation I had for this movie paid off. I enjoyed it as much as I thought I would. This will be definitely a rewatch movie. It was a movie that I, after I watched it, I immediately walked out and told Monica, dude, you got to watch this movie. I think even you will enjoy it. And it was just, I thought it was great. I really, really, really loved it. And from where we stand right now, I mean, I think this would have to be a top five movie of the year for me so far. And I know we've got a lot of road ahead of us, but as we stand here, you know, in April, I think it's a definite top five so far for me. So Ike, what'd you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, I definitely enjoyed it. And I would probably have to agree. It's definitely up there. Definitely top five potential. Obviously, there's still a lot of movies that are coming out this year, so we'll see how the year, you know, finalizes. But it has potential, that's for sure. So for me, I guess the big thing for this movie, and you kind of mentioned it, is that the movie looked great. I mean, it felt like I was watching a talk show from the 70s. You know, it just felt right. You know, that was the big thing too, is while I was watching with Kayla, she even mentioned, she's like, it really seems like this is something that they pulled from like an old archive. Mm-hmm. And you know, like you said, there's a lot of great back and forth in this. You know, David Desmalchian, he's fantastic. I love him. He's been in a bunch of different things, and he's been, done like smaller roles. Like he was like a criminal in one of the Batman movies. You know, he played Polka Dot Man in the Suicide Squad movie. He's really good mm-hmm. in that. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's like you have this really great cast being led up by David, who quite frankly did such a great job. You know, he felt like an old school, like Johnny Carson or, you know, any something like that, you know, and he really embodied that role. And then you also have all these great people around him in the film. You know, you have Christo, which was like the psychic medium who did a fantastic job. And
oh yeah, I forgot about mentioning him. Yeah.
Yeah. He did great. That scene with him, and obviously spoiler, where he like vomits up the black goo was really, really, I mean, it was gross, but it was really cool to see. And like you said, Carmichael Haig, who is like the skeptic, of course, you know, he came out and was essentially just trying to disprove everything. And like you said, he obviously comes across as kind of like an asshole. I mean, he's the antagonist here. He's basically pushing everyone to say like, yeah, this is all fake. This is how he did it. And the part where he like hypnotized everyone was really fucked up too.
Yeah.
Like that was really like extreme. Like I was like, holy shit. And so I think the part that was like really cool to me is that you have like this whole progression of the story, right? You have this whole progression where up to that point, you kind of think like, okay, maybe Carmichael is right. Maybe everything that's happened up to this point has been like an illusion. Maybe, you know, we've been in a trance, you know, and they start playing back the video and then like just shit hits the fan. You know, yeah. I don't want to ruin the whole thing, but I mean, really though, shit hits the fan hard. And there's a pretty gruesome like 5 minutes before it turns into just a straight up trip fest. Like it gets super trippy, super weird. And then before you know it, like it ends on probably one of the biggest twists that I could not have foreseen. And it was just so good. It was just very well done. And there was a lot of deep lore to this. I feel like you kind of mentioning it, like talking about how David Desmalchian's character was like a I don't think they call it Bohemian Grove, but they're talking about a real life place called Bohemian Grove that supposedly rich people go to you know, be part of some weird like club that's somewhat demon based. Maybe there's no official confirmation of what Bohemian Grove is, but it is in California and it does exist. So that's what he's kind of referencing. So you know, not only does this movie touch on some real life, like conspiracy type things, but like it jumps into this whole like paranormal side of things. And it jumps into like the skepticism. And I don't know, just the way that they presented it was done so well and done in such a way that I was very enthralled from, you know, from the first step to the last step. And another thing too, and I forgot to mention this. This reminded me a lot, I don't know why, but it reminded me a lot of the, that when a couple, I think it was like last year or the year before, we did a Halloween special where we talked about Halloween specials. And there was one that you made me watch, and I cannot remember the guy's name, but he was a talk show host. I think he was like a local talk show host or something like that, but it was like a Halloween special. He was like a trucker in one of the scenes.
The one with Kiss and everything on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was his name? The Paul Lynde.
Yeah. Paul Lynde. Yeah, I don't know why, but like during the parts where like weird shit wasn't happening, it felt like a Paul Lynde special. Like it felt like I was watching what I was watching then. So I could imagine this not kind of being like nostalgic for some people who were like, who were raised during that time where like talk show hosts were like the big, were like, you know, were hot shit for better phrase. Cause I mean, not to say that they're not cool now. I don't watch talk show hosts. I don't watch Jimmy Fallon or Kimmel or whoever's on the air still. I don't know if Jay Leno still does it or not.
No.
I was about to say, what is his name? David, Letterman. Yeah, I know he doesn't do it anymore.
No.
But fun fact, David Letterman is a Ball State alumni. So for my Ball State alumni, chirp. Anywho, but yeah, so I could definitely see this being like super nostalgic for people who grew up during that time and saw like talk show hosts. So not only do you have that cool nostalgia factor, not only do you have the great effects, you have the great acting, you have the great story. It just all kind of came together in a perfect storm. So yeah, if anybody's out there like thinking, oh, maybe I should watch this, absolutely. Give it a watch. Give it a try. It's a fun watch. Nothing serious. You don't have to. That's another thing, is that this is an easy watch. This doesn't require, you know, pinpoint precision watching. You don't have to like watch every frame looking for secrets. It's very in front of you. It's not hard to watch, is what I'm getting at.
No, but it was super fun. It had no real glaring flaws to it, right? There was nothing, overwhelming about it that, you know, jumps out. It had all the elements, to me. I loved it. Thought it was a great movie. I was, super worried going in because I had it built up in my mind and all this anticipation because I thought it, it looked so great and was something I was going to enjoy. And sometimes that's, man, that bites you, right? Bites you in the ass when you build it up in your head. And, and it came through for what I was anticipating. It was very, very enjoyable. And again, I see this being a movie that I will rewatch, probably fairly regularly. I could see it being one of those movies that every so often I throw on and watch. Because again, it was a blast. It was super enjoyable to watch. Like you said, super easy to watch. And like I mentioned earlier, I mean, it just felt like it flew by, right? It was just, there's some movies where it lingers in parts where it kind of drags a bit. This movie just kept going. And like you mentioned earlier, right? It's easy to get lost in it and to feel like, man, you're really watching. To feel like you're really watching footage of this, late night show when it was being done and some of the outtakes from it. Because everything was just on point with between the look, the acting, the approach, everything else. And it didn't try to, period pieces work best when they don't try to overwhelm you with it and be like, oh, look, this is the 70s. So make sure everything's lime green.
Right.
They captured the feel in the stylings and everything else. So you knew what it was, where it was without it feeling artificial. I don't know. I loved it. Just bravo. I see it gets all, it's gotten all kinds of praise and it's well deserved. It is, like I said, very strong candidate for me where we stand right now. To be a top five movie of the year. And I looked at the ones that we previewed that we were most looking forward to. This was not one of the five, but we did have Saw 11 in there as one of the five, which is now no longer a 2024 release. So take that for what you will. No, it was a great film. I mean, I can't say a whole lot. I don't want to give certain aspects of the film away. Some of the particularly the prime ending there.
Yeah,
I'd rather people watch it, but it was well worth it, right? It was, even watching the film where you had a feeling of certain aspects that were going to be important and whatever else, you couldn't really figure out where it was going per se. And it's not that it was, I don't know, it's hard for me to formulate what I'm trying to say here. It's not that it was so super unique in what it did and in the ending that, you know, it just blew your mind. But it was just one of those things where it just wasn't so, so blatant. And for me, what was unique is because it was so enjoyable and was just moving so greatly and watching these people, I didn't find myself trying to overthink and figure out where it was going next, which is rare for me for a movie, right? Because usually I watch a movie, I'm trying to figure out the next couple steps. And this one, I was really just kind of caught up in what was happening and didn't overthink it too much. So that was a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to add too, like you said, I think the word that you said was it didn't feel artificial. I think that's a really good way to put it. Because like you said, a lot of times when you watch these movies and they're specifically trying to like go for like a time period, they're going to beat you over the head with it. But it didn't feel, like you said, artificial. Yeah. It felt natural. It felt, you know, it felt very homogenous is a good word. It just kind of just felt right, you know. And the reason I want to touch on that is that was like one of the first things that my wife said when we were watching it. She's like, this kind of feels like it's actually in the 70s. She's like, it's kind of weird, but like, it's a good thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If they can set the setting right, that's going to be a positive thing for the rest of the movie, which it was, you know. And like you said, I don't want to kind of throw away the final twist. I'm sure somebody out there can probably guess it. You know, there's always that one guy who's like, oh, I saw that coming from a mile away. But yeah. I genuinely couldn't, and I didn't, it did not anticipate basically where they left off in the movie. It was very good, very much a kind of like a wow, okay, this is, that just happened, you know. And another thing too is the music inside it and like the sound effects were really funny. That was a thing too, I guess, you know, with a lot of talk shows and stuff, they have like sound effects, right, that they kind of mm-hmm, use real mm-hmm. time.
Yep.
So you have like, you know, Dave and Desmalchian reacting to like live reaction to like sound effects that are happening and stuff. So it's very unique how they did it. And it also helped with the immersion. It didn't feel, like you said, artificial. It was a fully immersive experience. And not only people from the, you know, who grew up in the 70s are going to enjoy this, but anybody who likes horror, you know, likes good stuff. It genuinely just falls into sort of like that. This is a very good movie. I will rewatch this movie. And this will probably end up on an annual rewatch of some sort, you know, as I go through the years. There's a lot of movies I rewatch, and this will probably end up being on that short list.
Yeah, I mean, this will be a fun movie to rewatch around Halloween, you know, with it being set at Halloween, and you know, that's probably every year, you know, when I'll probably rewatch it around that time, because it'll just fit right in there so well. So, all right, well, let's rank this sucker. So, Ike, out of 5 screams, what are you giving Late Night with the Devil?
So obviously, like we said, this movie was very, very good. It was not a perfect movie, but based on everything that we've put together, you know, I am going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. It was a very enjoyable movie. It was, you know, it was something that I'm going to definitely have to rewatch. The only reason I didn't bump it to a 4 was simply because 4 is sort of like that pinnacle moment where it's like, this is a nearly perfect movie in all ways, you know, like Terrifier 2, you know, or, you know, Skinamarink and things of that nature. So when you hold it up to that perspective, I'm like, this movie just falls short just a little bit, but that's not to say it was not a superb movie.
Yeah, absolutely. What did I give you? First Omen. Was it First Omen I gave a 4 here recently?
I think so.
Yeah, I really liked First Omen, but I mean, I agree. I will give it a 3.5 out of 5 as well. I did, you know, strongly considering going to 4 with it, because it was so enjoyable. But I held back a little bit and gave it a day or two to think, and I settled on a 3.5 as well. But I believe there, you know, could be a very strong argument made for giving it a 4 out of 5, and it probably wouldn't take a whole lot of coercion to convince me to do that. I mean, it's I you know, because I was right there in that range, right, of trying to figure out which way to go here. So very good movie. Highly advise people go and watch it. Again, it is on Shudder, which is also obviously available if you have AMC Plus. It's a part of that package. So go and watch it now. I'm sure it's also available video on demand if you prefer that route. But make sure you give it a watch. It's a fun movie. Well worth all the praise it's been getting. And it's a fun film. It's one of those films that I think will be talked about for years and years and years of, you know, kind of have a little cult like following of people that just really, really like the movie. And I could see people getting, really getting passionate about this film and that, you know, into the future. I see it being that kind of film. So, as Ike mentioned earlier, next episode, we are reviewing Abigail, which is out in theaters now. We know it's been out for a week or so already, but that's okay. We kind of had a hole here, so we were going to catch back up. We had kind of wanted to review Abigail anyway, and we bumped it for something else last week or the week before. I can't remember which one. So we kind of had a hole, and we thought, well, heck, let's go ahead and catch Abigail. And as he said, Ike's already seen it. I'm going to be going to see it soon. Got one of my favorites, Catherine Newton, in it again, who was also recently in Lisa Frankenstein that we talked about. Also has what's the actress's name that was in the most recent couple Scream movies?
Melissa Barrera.
Yeah, Barrera. That's it. I'm shooting a blank on it. she's also in it. And you know, who the hell doesn't want to see a movie about a vampire ballerina, and or whatever it is, a killer ballerina. I assumed it was a vampire, but I don't know that. We'll find out for sure. But anyway, that is what we're reviewing next episode. So Ike, before we close this sucker out and get out of here, anything you want to say?
Oh man, all I can say is if you go to Bohemian Grove, don't talk to Abraxas, don't stop at Go, don't collect $200, just don't do it. He's a mean guy. He's not so nice.
Yes, absolutely. And what was the name of his show on Night? Was it Night Owls?
I think so. Yep.
Yeah, Night Owls. Yeah. Don't talk to any demons. You never. They're demons for a reason. They're not gonna, not gonna give you. I mean, well, they might give you something, but in the end, you're gonna get the worst of it. So just.
They tend to want like a soul or something in return. You know, not typically a good exchange.
Yeah, I feel like demons nowadays might be going the route of the telemarketer, and just that's how they're trying to get hold of you. So, but I never answer those. One of the best features ever created by man is the scam likely that comes up on calls. Love it. So, all right, but there you go. Y'all don't get caught in any demon deals, and make sure you go watch Abigail so you're prepared for us next week when we review it. But until then, make sure you subscribe to us, rate and review if possible, share all of our posts. Follow us on social media. Do all those things. And thank you for your continued support. And until next episode, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.